Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for October 2018. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. About a year ago, in October 2017, the U.S. Court of Appeal for the Federal Circuit issued its decision in Amgen v. Sanofi. That decision upended the case law regarding patenting antibodies. As you'll hear from our guest, that decision is subject to interpretation, but on first reading, it appears that the Federal Circuit has said that a description of the antigen is not sufficient to describe the invention, the antibody that binds to that antigen. Christopher Lowe is a partner at Fitzpatrick, Chella, Harper & Cinto in New York City. Chris practices complex patent litigation in the areas of pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, and chemistry. He's litigated patent cases involving oncology therapies, anti-HIV therapies, anti-hepatitis drugs, antidepressants, and statins. His practice includes appearing in court as well as in inter-parties review proceedings before the Patent Trial and Appeal Board. He also counsels clients on transactional and patent prosecution issues concerning both small molecule drugs and biological products, and on a range of intellectual property matters, including inventorship, trade secrets, and licensing. Chris is a prolific and award-winning writer on IP topics. His recent paper entitled End of Well-Characterized Antigen Test reviews the Amgen v. Sanofi CAFC decision and its aftermath 1 year later. I spoke with Chris from his office in New York City. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Don.
So for those listeners that are new to antibodies and antigens, can you just succinctly say what are they and why are they important?
Sure. So antibodies are large proteins that are typically generated by the human immune system. And these large proteins neutralize pathogens such as bacteria and viruses that make their way into the body. Antibodies typically recognize a unique molecule on the pathogen, which is called an antigen, and they bind to these antigens at a specific site called an epitope. This binding of the antigen either neutralizes the target directly or marks it for attack by other parts of the immune system. And since the 1990s, scientists and drug companies have been creating or modifying naturally occurring antibodies in the laboratory, and these efforts have been the focus of several patents.
Now, the CAFC decision in Amgen and Sanofi related to the sufficiency of the disclosure of the invention. Let's talk briefly about what the U.S. Patent Act requires in terms of disclosure of the invention and how to make it or use it.
Sure. So under U.S. law, we have a section of the patent statute, 35 U.S.C. 112, and the text of that statute reads, "The specification of the patent shall contain a written description of the invention and of the manner and process of making and using it in such full, clear, concise, and exact terms as to enable any person skilled in the art to which it pertains or with which it is most nearly connected to make and use the same." So that statute sets forth a written description requirement and an enablement requirement. And these two requirements have been interpreted by the Federal Circuit as separate requirements. The written description requirement essentially requires that the disclosure, the specification of the patent, show that the inventors were, quote, in possession of the claimed invention. And that's different from the enablement requirement, which requires that the specification provide sufficient detail to enable the ordinary skilled person to practice the claimed invention.
So prior to Amgen and Sanofi, what were the traditional ways of claiming antibodies?
You could do it by function, for example, an isolated antibody capable of binding protein X, or you could do it in terms of structure. So, for example, an isolated antibody comprising the amino acid sequence of sequence ID number 1.
You point out in your article in the early 2000s, claims to purely functional antibodies were acceptable so long as the antigen was sufficiently, quote, well-characterized, end quote. What did that mean?
Well, the question here is, what is that acceptable to? And in the United States, we have several tribunals that pass judgment on what types of claims will be acceptable under our patent laws. Among those tribunals, of course, are the United States Patent Office, the United States District Courts, and our Consolidated Patent Appeals Court, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. Now, what happened here is that in 2002, and again in 2008, the Patent and Trademark Office issued written description training manuals for its examiners. And in those training materials, it set forth a hypothetical, basically saying that you could potentially get a claim to a specific antibody by identifying the antigen to which it bound, provided that the antigen itself was sufficiently well characterized, for example, in terms of its amino acid sequence, its physical properties. And that was provided that the level of skill and knowledge in the art of antibodies at the time of the filing of the patent was such that the production of antibodies against that well-characterized antigen was conventional. So under that standard that was set forth in the 2002 and 2008 PTO training materials, you would have an adequate written description for a claim to an antibody, so long as your specification had a sufficient written description of the antigen to which that antibody bound.
And as we know, last October, the Amgen case kind of raised doubts about that test. Your article refers to the Federal Circuit applying the USPTO test in 2002 in the Enzo Biochem and GenProbe case. Could you describe what happened in that case?
Yeah, sure. So Enzo is the first of a series of cases that came out from the Federal Circuit. And, you know, initially the Federal Circuit seemed to acknowledge the well-characterized antigen test, but over time they've sort of curtailed its effect. So Enzo was the first case that acknowledged the existence of this well-characterized antigen test. But interestingly, the Federal Circuit acknowledged this test in the context of nucleic acid probes, not antibodies. So the technology is a little different here. And what the Federal Circuit said in Enzo was that basically the claim to a nucleic acid probe met the written description requirement because the specification here provided a description of bacterial DNA to which the probe is bound. And so according to the Federal Circuit in Enzo, because the claimed nucleotide sequences preferentially bind to the genomic DNA of the strains of bacteria, those sequences under USPTO guidelines may be adequately described.
You point out that post-Enzo, they applied the same test, but with differing results.
Sure. So subsequently, what happened is that the Federal Circuit began narrowing the well-characterized antigen test and arguing that it applied only in certain situations. So the next case after Enzo was Noel versus Lederman in 2004. And that decision focused on the question of whether the antigen was sufficiently well-characterized. And so here in this Noel case, we had a claim to an antibody that bound a human antigen, CD40. Now, the specification in question described only mouse CD40. It didn't disclose human CD40 or other types of CD40 proteins. So the human antigen, according to the CAFC in this case, was not well characterized. Subsequently, in 2010, the Federal Circuit addressed in Centocor versus Abbott the question of whether the antibody was sufficiently well characterized. So going from the antigen now to the antibody. And in Centocor, we had a patent that claimed fully human antibodies that bound human TNF-alpha with high affinity and certain other characteristics. And in this case, Centocor argued that its specification provided an adequate written description of any antibody that bound human TNF-alpha. And the Federal Circuit disagreed. It said that the USPTO's well-characterized antigen test was limited to circumstances in which, first, the applicant fully disclosed a novel protein, that's a novel antigen, and two, and most importantly, generating the claimed antibody was so routine at the time of the filing of the patent that possessing the protein itself or the antigen itself placed the applicant in possession of the corresponding antibody. And in the Centocor case, the Federal Circuit found that that second requirement wasn't met. Obtaining a high affinity antibody that was human and was specific to human TNF-alpha wasn't possible using conventional or routine technology that was available as of the date of Centocor's application.
So that brings us to Amgen v. Sanofi. What happened in the Amgen v. Sanofi case?
Well, that's really interesting because that case comes right off of Centocor. And the district court trial judge in Amgen versus Sanofi used the Federal Circuit's Centocor holding as basically a jury instruction. So it told the jury in that case, if you find that the level of skill and knowledge in the art of antibodies at the time of the patent filing was such that the production of antibodies against such an antigen was conventional or routine, then the written description requirement is met. And on appeal from Amgen versus Sanofi, the Federal Circuit actually rejected that jury instruction. Now, why did it do that? Because the jury instruction seems to track the language of Centocor pretty closely. Well, it distinguished Centocor, Noel, and Enzo. It basically said that in Centocor and Noel, the antibody claims in those cases ultimately were found invalid for lack of adequate written description. So whatever was in those decisions about the well-characterized antigen test was just dicta. The other interesting thing about the Amgen versus Sanofi decision is that it basically says that the well-characterized antigen test doesn't describe the invention, the antibodies, as required by Section 112 of the patent statute. It describes something else, the antigen. And in order to satisfy 112, it's not sufficient to conflate enablement with written description. You can't meet the written description requirement simply by saying that there was technology available to make and use the claimed invention. You had to do more to demonstrate possession of the claimed antibodies. Another interesting aspect about this decision, though, is that the Federal Circuit may actually have left open the door to using the well-characterized antigen test under different facts. And in distinguishing Centocor, Noel, and Enzo, Judge Prost in the Amgen versus Sanofi decision said that written description inquiries are always fact-specific. And so she said, we can't say in this particular context involving a newly characterized antigen and a functional genus claim to corresponding antibodies is one in which the underlying science establishes that a finding of make and use actually does equate to the required description of the claimed products. Well, that raises a question. Well, are there other contexts where the underlying science may support the application of the well-characterized antigen test?
Yeah, now speaking as a Canadian, I have no ability whatsoever to interpret U.S. law, but those last two points sound to me contradictory, and let's parse them out. First, the last comment sounds like it could be referring to a lack of evidence. We can't say in this case there was that it meets the written description requirement. Do you think that's the case, or would more evidence that the antibody's easy to make once the antigen's defined still miss the apparent description of the invention itself requirement?
Yeah, so although the Amgen case on its face is limited to its particular facts, it seems like Judge Prost there was saying that some other type of evidence, evidence of possession by the inventors rather than just instructions on how to make and use the claimed antibody, is required to satisfy the written description requirement. I'm reading tea leaves here, but I think that Judge Prost is seeming to suggest that working examples of the claimed antibodies are what's required here, not just the description of the antigen. Now, interestingly, Amgen is asking the Supreme Court to overturn the Federal Circuit's longstanding precedent on 112. At the Supreme Court, Amgen says it's a mistake to parse the 112 statute to include separate written description and enablement requirements. According to Amgen's Supreme Court petition, evidence of enablement alone should suffice to satisfy 112, and that's what they're arguing.
So coming off that point and the CFC decision, the other interpretation of those sort of two, as I said, apparently contradictory things is saying it's not enough to describe how to work and use the invention, that is to enable it, no matter how much you say how to use a black box and no matter how easy it is to make a black box from something else, namely the antigen, are they still saying that you have to describe what's in the black box?
Well, the suggestion from the Amgen versus Sanofi case is that you have to describe what's in the box and demonstrate that you had possession of it at the time that you filed your patent application.
So the CFC used the term newly characterized antigen versus well-characterized antigen. Is there a difference between a completely newly discovered antigen versus a well-practiced or known antigen? Does this affect the routine and conventional nature of obtaining the antibody given the nature of the antigen?
Well, I think the state of the law as of CentiCor suggested that all of those elements were required. The antigen had to be new. It also had to be sufficiently well characterized. And the method of making an antibody against that particular antigen had to have been routine and conventional in the art at the time of the patent's filing. And Amgen now suggests that even more is required.
So how has the USPTO in the last year reacted to the CAFC decision in Amgen and Sanofi?
Well, the USPTO actually on February 22nd, 2018, issued a memo to its examiners. And that memo pretty explicitly said, don't follow the 2000 and 2008 training materials that set forth the well-characterized antigen test. They're outdated now. And in fact, it said that in view of the Amgen decision, adequate written description of a newly characterized antigen alone should not be considered adequate written description of a claimed antibody to that newly characterized antigen, even when preparation of such an antibody is routine and conventional. So the PTO certainly is viewing the Amgen versus Sanofi decision as a pretty strong repudiation of the well-characterized antigen doctrine.
You point out in your article that the European Patent Office test is different than the Amgen result, and it's more like the old well-characterized antigen test. Could you explain the EPO situation?
Sure. Just a disclaimer, I don't practice European patent law, so my statements here shouldn't be taken as legal advice on that subject. But my understanding is that the European Patent Office generally considers functional claims to an antibody that binds an antigen to be legally sufficient if the antigen itself is novel in the art and the antibody can be generated using standard or routine techniques. So that's a quite different situation from the situation that we now have under Amgen versus Sanofi. My understanding, though, is that European patent law doesn't impose a written description requirement, i.e. a possession requirement that's separate from the sufficiency requirement. So there we have a melding of, you know, the enablement with the written description standard. And in the United States, again, we have this sort of separate burden to satisfy the written description requirement by demonstrating, quote-unquote, possession.
So how is the CFC decision in Amgen and Sanofi changed or changing the practice in the antibody patent prosecution and litigation field? Have you noticed any changes so far?
Well, it's a fairly recent development, but on the prosecution side, some are predicting that the Amgen decision may drive another wedge between the United States and the rest of the world concerning patent coverage. So the broader genus coverage that pharma and biotech companies might still be allowed to claim in non-US jurisdictions may no longer be quite so available here, at least not without maybe adding more to the specification to bolster those broad claims. As for litigation, I think the Amgen versus Sanofi decision continues a trend in which the Federal Circuit has sort of imposed significant burdens on biotech companies to rebut potential 112 attacks in court.
So is a workaround for the inventor to actually characterize the antibody by, I don't know, injecting it into a rat, let the rat create the antibodies, and then characterize the antibodies? Or are people doing that?
Well, the general goal of most patentees in this space is to have their patent claims cover human antibodies. So including only animal experiments in a patent specification potentially could raise 112 issues where the claims cover more than just animal antibodies. Now, it's worth noting, though, that the Amgen versus Sanofi case presents a interesting fact pattern. The patent specification there actually identifies the amino acid sequences of over two dozen representative human antibodies. So one of the more interesting questions about the Amgen case that currently remains unanswered is whether that number of representative embodiments suffices to satisfy the written description requirement for the antibody genus claims. But we're going to have to wait and see what the Supreme Court does with Amgen's cert petition first before we get an answer to that specific question.
Thanks very much for these insights, Chris.
Oh, thanks. It was my pleasure.
Christopher Lowe is a partner at Fitzpatrick, Chella, Harper, and Cinto in New York City. For further information on Chris Lowe and his paper on the Amgen v. Sanofi decision entitled End of Well-Characterized Antigen Test, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.